We have a few questions on 3x5s, but very few. We have only 4 or 5 of them. And so we'll go ahead and handle those particular questions first, and then we'll just entertain questions from the floor. My function will simply be to try and dole it out to whomever seems appropriate in the audience or on the panel. And as far as any guidelines, there are no particular stringent guidelines as to the range of our questions. They could be good if we aim them at certain issues of the community ministry, some of the input that you've had today, and if it's an issue that we feel is broader than we can handle at this point, we'll just say that and press on. Okay, the first question that we have was handed in, or not the first one handed in, the first one we'll treat, is in the collegiate ministry, we emphasize that it should not be orphan-centered, but go for the non-Christian. Yet in 2:7, it seems to be orphan-oriented as we go into churches. Thus, 1, how does the 2:7 relate to our emphasis on reaching the lost? And 2, was the 2:7 designed to, A, get churches off our back, or B, because God is clearly leading us into this kind of orphan ministry? So, I think, Brother Early, why don't you begin with... Yeah. God, the signature is Lorne. No. There is a B part. So, Ron, do you want to begin and then
I think there's a little difference between an orphan Christian that we see on a campus and in the community, a layman who has a heart for God and really would be open to some training. And I really feel that there's a big difference between the input the 2:7 series gives a layman and just a growth kind of thing. It's a harder impact. And the sleeper there is that thing I lay out, the 2% versus the 20 or 30% and the gradually increasing standard, that it looks softer than it is. And we've got right out of the margin of the growth pattern all through that thing. We allow just a little margin of tolerance there. So it looks soft, but it's got a lot of teeth underneath that nice soft look.
Okay, but what is happening evangelism-wise? I think that probably is some of the intent. Is evangelism coming out of the 2:7? You know, are the people that are doing it evangelizing?
Yes, it is. It is not as aggressive as it would be if we were to put some power in behind that and push it. But we felt that when the 2:7 was being written, we should not reinvent the wheel and have a segment in it that would be like the Kennedy program. But the people are coming to Christ. It's kind of like, said, oh, no longer make mention of him, but his word is in my heart as a burning fire shut up my bones, and I was worried for bearing I could not stay. These people, just as an overflow of their life, as they're following Christ, they're doing it more naturally. But they're just doing it with relatives, friends, neighbors, and they aren't launching out in a spearhead evangelism into anything.
Okay. Okay, would any of the other 2:7 men... Oh, Terry?
I think one of the things I have appreciated about Ron and the gang there in Denver, I think a couple of years ago or a year or so ago, they saw a need. As we just wrapped some, it became very clear that they felt that was a need in the area of the 2:7. And then in the rewriting of that, Ron, maybe you could bring the guys up to date, that you saw the emphasis, the fact that it was field-tested. And that's a healthy thing, I feel, about the 2:7, is everything in there has been field-tested. It's not something they think will work. It works, and it's been used and is put to work. And so then it was rewritten, and entirely the emphasis was placed much earlier, involved in the 2:7. I think one of the thoughts that is highlighted in my own mind is when Ron was presenting the overview yesterday, he shared the first two courses with primary influence as one of intake, and that the last two courses are primary to one of outreach. And one of the two things the guys seem to be experientially at least working on now is in the area of evangelism and in the area of man-to-man. So I think therein lies the key, is whoever's leading the course makes it an emphasis. But Ron, maybe you could share where you came from and why you altered your course on that.
Right. We still feel evangelism is the greatest weakness in the T7 series. But we have done all that we can to beef that up, such as moving the bridge illustration from course 6 and course 3, so they have that available earlier. We're doing a more thorough job on the testimony, so we're getting that down. And then in those PACE concepts, the P-A-C-E, we changed the E. It used to be something else. It won't bother you, but it used to be. But now it's being evangelism prospect list. Those people are really writing down those names, and prayers are really being focused in on that. But I would be quick to say this in all honesty. There is no way that a program that's put in the hands of non-navigator staff and non-hand-trained navigator people, there's no way that will generate as much evangelism as one of our hard-hitting ministries. But it is also true that just getting people into the basics and getting their own spiritual life stabilized is generating evangelism. I don't know what our converts can earn, about 100 each year, something like that. Well, that's not too shabby for us. We're not displeased with that. Let me just say one other thing. We are thinking in terms of some additional written packages that 2-7 people can get after course 6. It won't be course 7, 8, 9. But we're thinking of another input, which would be an evangelism package that would be harder, tighter, where they actually go out and do it. We're thinking of a man-to-man package that would really build that in. That's not built in until some end up doing it. So, questions about those weaknesses are there. There are also some strengths
okay, do any of the other 2-7 men have just any very brief addendum to their evangelism experience? Is it happening?
Jerry, we've been in the ministry 2-7 since last spring, and just off the top of my head, I can think of about 7 or 8 people that have come to Christ, just not through me, but people in the groups have led people to Christ. Orthopedic surgeon a couple of weeks ago led 2 of his patients to Christ. A fellow shared his testimony somewhere, and a couple of people were saved. A pastor in working through the testimony with some of the folks in his church, 2 people were saved. So there are converts, at least in our ministry.
Jerry, I might say that in our church, we have just about everybody that's in the 2-7 is also in an evangelism explosion. So there is a boost there, we're seeing a lot of fruit simply because of that angle, but they are becoming more sensitive to evangelism in their personal life as a result of this.
As opposed to the organized evangelism explosion outreach.
Which EE has also emphasized personal, but I noticed that in the people in the 2-7, that we're beginning to see more and more of an emphasis in reaching out. The two have worked very well together in churches, and so I don't sense any problem there. We have in simply because of our situation.
Okay. All right. Good. This is a question. Jack has one portion of it here, and there are several questions that go together. It's kind of the relationship of the 2-7 and the traditional ministry, how they work together in the community. Other question, is multiplying 2-7 groups a sufficient objective for a full-time NAV staff? And will the question associated with it, perhaps a little different, will multiplying 2-7 groups multiply laborers? And of course, all of this comes into the guidelines for the staff in the community. And I thought that perhaps Jack should speak to that issue, and then maybe you want to field it out to one of the guys in 2-7 if you'd like, Jack.
Is multiplying 2-7 groups like that?
Is that the end of the meeting?
No, it's not the end of the meeting. You just said sorry about that.
Yeah. Is multiplying 2-7 groups a sufficient objective for a full-time navigator staff? No. Will multiplying 2-7 groups multiply labors? Not necessarily. How do 2-7 emphasize? Are those answers sufficient? Okay, let's back up to question one. They are sufficient? Is multiplying 2-7 groups a sufficient objective for a full-time navigator? Obviously, no. I don't think that the objective of a navigator staff man involved in the 2-7 ministry is just to multiply 2-7 groups. That's never been my impression in talking to any of the guys that are involved in it. The objective is to make disciples, navigator disciples, by the way, although they may not end up being tied into the navigator stream of things as a college nav disciple or a military nav disciple would be, to make disciple makers and to produce some laborers out of that. And it's the involvement of people. My understanding is, and I would like to have any of you guys who are really deeply involved in the 2-7 speak to this. The combination of getting people involved in the 2-7 course plus what Bob Wilbraham talked about this morning is the real key to the thing, as far as it producing the product that we want to see produced. It's the combination of the involvement of people and picking off those few eager beavers and beginning to spend personal time with them. And last February, I mentioned that I spent 2 days with about 7 or 8 of the guys who have been most involved in the 2-7. And this was the refrain that I heard over and over again that they emphasized, that's the real key to the 2-7 producing what we want it to produce. So that's a long answer to the question. The short answer is no. And I think it's also the answer to the second part, will multiplying 2-7 groups multiply labors? Well, no, not necessarily. It depends on, you know, that man's involvement in the lives of people who he is being put in touch with as a result of being involved in the 2-7 ministry. And then how do 2-7 emphasis ministries relate to the 7 guidelines for NAV community staff? I think I'd like to ask one or more of the guys involved in the 2-7 how they feel about that. Soderberg or Dave Johnson or somebody. How do the 2-7 emphasis ministries relate to the 7 guidelines for NAV community staff? I think the question could be reworded, if I understand it. Does the 2-7 ministry fit within it? Is that how you guys would interpret that? Anybody want to speak to that?
Oh, Soderberg.
Soderberg.
I think that, we've already spoken about that, the aggressive evangelism. You can't program that in. You know, but people are being converted in the normal witnessing that people do, and I've seen that in my groups. I'm very excited to see that. I think question 4, their ministry should be primarily, or not question 4, guideline 4. Their ministry should be primarily to the 1835 age group. I don't need to tell that to the church. I don't even know the pastor that we're on. Sorry, he's 36. He can't get into it. He's 45 or something.
What has your experience been, though?
Okay, my experience has been the first group I had They were, except for the pastor's wife, the people I took through, they were all over that age. Pastor's wife, they were within that age. A group down in the South Holland, they're about half and half. Half within the guidelines and half above it. The most recent group I got started, they're all within that guideline. And there is a difference. The younger ones, they're really... But they're good people, you know, whether below the age or above the age. So I don't know that we can... My experience is that you can't specifically say to the pastors you're doing selection.
Excuse me, Gene, can I interrupt you? For those that you are spending personal time with, is it scattered, or how, where are you concentrating your man-to-man, for instance, where you give your personal effort?
Well, the key individual, not depending on the age, the people who I feel are the most valuable to spend the time, the man-to-man time. Okay. As far as the other points... doesn't apply.
Wilbraham?
Well, as far as aggressive evangelism, if we are involved with a group, we have freedom to do that if we want to. There's nothing restricting us from doing that. Then one summer, we spent the whole summer having evangelistic Bible studies and then inviting their friends. And also, we have gone out on visitation evangelism in our group. So that, you know, if I'm leading it, I have the freedom to do that, and I can produce that in my group. But those that I'm spending my personal time with, I can carry on a ministry of aggressive evangelism. It's not permitting me, you know, it's not hindering me, I should say, my 2-7 ministry.
Bob, and the age spread, how does it fit in the people you're investing in personally?
They are all, I think, within it. I'm not sure about one, right around 35 mark, but they're all around the early 30s, late 20s, and early 30s.
Now that's a big cross section because that's talking about how many people. That's, you know, 5 years in one church, youth church.
Well, I'm talking mainly about the ones Bob is personally investing man-to-man time with. See, that's, as I understand, Jackson, it's not so much who's in the groups as to who we're focusing, you know, the staff man's time. That's who you were responding to, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Denny had a comment?
Yes, just a general comment. The whole question that made me wonder if the person really understood, and they might have missed it when in Ron's presentation, that the 2-7 does, if followed, produce a navigator disciple. As I approached the 2-7, I think I approached it in a kind of an ideal way because no supervisor told me I had to do it. But Chuck Singletary asked me if I'd be interested in it, and I was, and I went and spent a week with the guys in Denver. I had one question in the back of my mind when I went to them, will it produce a navigator disciple? My conclusion was it'll do a better job than I was doing. In my sort of from-the-hip type style and so forth. And so that's when I became very interested in it. And so that, just that comment about the profile. On the age group, I just quickly sort of calculated the groups, you know, that I can visualize there in the LA area, and I'm delighted to see the majority are well within that bracket. In fact, even the guys in Denver were surprised that we saw it work very well with college students. One church, Jack knows the church, First Brethren in Long Beach, got up to 125 college students in the 2-7 as they finished the spring. Now in the fall, they've split them. They let half go into the grad group, what they call a grad group, you know, post-college. So we're quite pleased that our majority is easily within that bracket. Another guideline that I found no difficulty in any of the guidelines of community ministry, and I especially think it's important that we work in more than one church. Harv or John asked me if I was only working within Lake Avenue, and I said, you know, we're hardly working there at all at 2-7. They have three slim groups. We're in 14 churches in Los Angeles. And the best 2-7 ministry is not in the one church that I attend.
Okay, let's go on. Just one brief question on the 2-7 here. When do you recommend someone going through the 2-7 can begin to lead one? That's not phrased quite right, but anyhow, when can a person in the 2-7 begin to lead one? I think I know the answer, but Ron, you just want to say what you guys do?
Those at the end of course 3, we feel like a swing back around. They ought to be 2 courses ahead of their students when that's possible. The ideal person is the one that's gone through all 6 courses.
Right.
Swings back around and teaches.
Okay, and then the exception is when you're just beginning in a new area where you have nobody, you will take them through on a quick run on the first set of leadership may well be just 1 course ahead. Isn't that right?
Yes.
All right, fine. Ray Ho has a question. If you would go ahead and read that and answer it, Ray.
This question says, is there a possibility of some added preparation of collegians before graduation for the community environment? And I'm sure the answer is yes, there is some possibility. In the Midwest, our thinking is that we won't gear the collegiate ministry to prepare them for that primarily. We will direct the collegiate ministry in the way that is best suited to winning and collegians and discipling collegians in the college environment. However, as they go through, they're going to learn some things that will equip them for living in the community. Things like becoming solid in the basics. They will learn in the process, while our ministry is not built primarily on relationship evangelism, but that they will be doing that and learning that. And of course, one of the tools that they learn that turns out, I think, quite helpful is leading evangelists, setting up and leading evangelistic Bible studies, which they can use anywhere. A thought that we have just discussed among our collegiate directors earlier this month that we plan to move on is an orientation, or whatever you'd call it, sometime in the winter spring. We'd like to keep it towards the end of their school year before graduation so that we don't distract them from there are other opportunities, but prior to graduation, about the spring time, to have some special sessions for graduating seniors in which some topics could be covered that would help to prepare them for making this transition, to tell them, now you were in a collegiate world, we did things this way because this was a culture, this was an effective way for ministering to the collegians. Now as you go, here are some things that you can still do in the community, but here are some things that are different, to also give some other practical things that will help them, to which I will welcome your suggestions as to things that you think we could effectively cover then. Another idea that we're proceeding on, if we can work out the details that we're working on, I got the idea from Brother Lewis here, is a 2-7 clinic for our graduating seniors. We feel that not many of them by any reason are going to be going into cities to join a Navigator community ministry where we have alumni going, and wherever they go, very likely they'll tie into a church regardless of tying into an organized Nav ministry or out there in the Tules by themselves. So we feel a place to be able to introduce them to this tool is prior to graduation. And we'd like to do it this spring for graduating seniors, and we're trying to work out the details with the 2-7 men.
Good. Thanks, Ray. Yes, Dolores?
I have a question to piggyback that. I'm finding that we prepare them maybe spiritually, but I'm not sure we prepare them practically. And I'm talking primarily in regards to girls, and I think for the most they think they're going to get married, so they don't really help them to plan on a career that's saleable. And I find we get girls come in, they don't have anything that, any commodity that is worth anything in the business world, and I've had some take jobs where there really isn't a pool where they can reach the people where they're working. And I think if maybe someone could help them to think in terms of not just getting a degree, but thinking in terms of something that they can do. And we know that even for those that get married, usually they, if their husbands die or something, they're going to have a career later on. But we've just had girls come into community ministry that really don't have, don't know how to job hunt, don't have a saleable skill, and so they're limited as far as their outreach.
Okay, good point. Could everybody hear that all right? Okay, this is the last question we have written.
At one point on our race, we've had a couple of people go through the 2-7 course where they didn't, before their church was ready for it. In other words, it was just, they did it just to get the training. And it was really tough on them, because then they went and tried to sell it to the minister, and it was very difficult on the minister, and it was very hard on the person. So I don't know, a person coming out of college and trying to fit into a church anyway has some difficulty, because nobody's interested in his revolutionary ideas. I don't know if we can encourage him to go to a church where they're at least ready for the 2-7 course.
Well, maybe you can start one. Okay, Wilbraham?
I'm sure we can give that graduating student some philosophy and some insights of how to go about it when you get to that church. That can save information. And that can be incorporated also into the training.
Into the clinic, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. That's very good.
Yeah, that should be an example. That's right. Watch it. Jack has a comment that I think is valid in this area. Well, yeah, I can understand why the church would have problems with the situation that Ed described. If I were a pastor and I didn't know much about the navigators, and here's this young kid coming out of college and trying to tell me what kind of a program I need in my church, I don't think I'd respond to that very well either. So I think it would depend a little bit on the kind of instruction we gave those kids. And the thing that I would see he could do is take the 2-7 and just get his own group going. Recruit some people into it and who are willing to commit themselves to it, whether they're, preferably maybe some other college kids in the church. But that'd be worth trying to figure out what kind of approach that he should use once he gets there and gets established. And maybe the pastor's not the best guy to start with.
I don't want to speak out of turn here. I feel that when a young person or a navigator, older, goes into a church, it's important that he be encouraged to go to that church to learn. I find that that's where we get into trouble. If we go to serve, I know it's not, I guess that's contradictory. We're supposed to be servants, but when a person has the idea of what that service is going to entail and they go to the pastor, it doesn't necessarily come off the way he intends it to. So I've made a decision. I go to church to learn, and I find after about 2 years, I'm all of a sudden asked to contribute.
Lewis?
Well, it seems to me that one of the things we have to communicate clearly at the training clinic is that the 2-7 is not designed just for the church, so that these collegiates that we train in the 2-7 ministry can take it in an apartment complex they live in, wherever they can begin to crank it up, wherever, rather than thinking it's just a tool for the church.
It's a good point. Yes, Chuck?
I think I've seen, as far as collegiates go, this thing go one step further in that it's not so much the methodology, it's the mentality. That's the difficulty in making the transition. It really doesn't matter whether it's the normal way we go about things or using the 2-7. I really don't believe, at least in my experience, that's been the issue. The issue has been whether or not that collegiate who goes to that church thinks that those people are okay the way they are. And I think that you can't do that in a clinic at the end of the year, because I've tried. You've got to start when they're freshmen, communicating in the way you are and the way you think, that those people out there on the outside of our system are okay.
because in one session, you are not going to be able to communicate. I don't believe, at least I wasn't able to communicate, that everybody outside is okay if I've been telling them different for 4 years, or at least 4.5 years. And we had a little deal going where, you know, we would spend so much time in the local church, and we'd do all sorts of things, and it was a real legal thing on paper, but the area reps administering it didn't believe the churches knew what they were doing. And so it just never came across to the collegiates that those people were okay, and it's worth investing 6 months or a year or 2 years in order to gain credibility. So I'm not sure the methodology is that important.
Okay, good. I think before we leave the 2-7 thing, and we can come back to other questions on it here in a moment, and Ron may have said this in the section, but I can't recall it. I think one thing they have found is that you just simply cannot do it in a church if that pastor is not behind it, 100%. And he said it, as I recall, you said a pastor and a couple of his key laymen. And I don't think we can emphasize strongly enough, however, that must be the pastor and some of his very best laymen, because the first group is going to either be the death knell or the birth of it. That's correct, isn't it? Okay, let's open it up for, I have one more question here, which I'm going to address to Jack and to Terry Taylor. I appreciate the way Jack gave the boundaries, 7 things, of the NAB community work. Very helpful. However, in the mind of the leadership, is heeding to the boundary limits going to mean that we also conform to current methodology of training? Many Southerners are going north to learn a system of training. Will we have freedom to develop our own methods as long as the product is the same, i.e., do we conform to the highly structured man-to-man? Okay,
I have a very simple answer.
I've got the answer written on the back. Would you like me to read your answer?
Yeah, you can read it.
No. And so, if, because he read that ahead of time. Basically, the question is, all methodology all over be exactly the same? Saying, must every region do it the way the Midwest does it? I think that's an underlying thing, since, might as well get blunt here, since Jack spent a couple of years back there. And I think the answer is no on that. But Terry, you may, since it seemed to have the Southerner in there, would you like to speak to that?
I've given my answer now, Terry. You give yours.
Being a good old boy, I'll I think the concept or the principle is the thing that we're primarily trying to focus on, and my answer is the same, no. But the principle is that there's a premise that we pretty well are committed to, that the process does determine the product to one degree or another. And that within some, and I don't know what the framework is, but within boundaries, you can so develop a process that you end up with a different product. And I think the concept that we're trying to major on is that whatever it is that we're doing in the community ministry or the military ministry or the collegiate ministry is that it's reproducible, it's passonable, it's transferable, the process is. And that because of that, it's both diagnostic, you can go in and see where we're going, figuring out how to get there and be very creative in that process. And I think we too want to be careful that we don't limit ourselves to one particular method. And as is often the case, whenever you the pendulum, if it's ever in the middle, it's only passing through. And where we are right now, the pendulum just so happens it's not in the middle in the area of training, and so that has been a highlight this year, and we want to make careful we don't make more out of that than we need to make out of it, because next year the pendulum will be somewhere else. So I think the concept that's dear to my heart is that
that whatever that process is, that it be pass-onable, reproducible, transferable, which is one of the key factors in assuring that multiplication takes place. And that's one of the things that I feel very dear about the 2-7. And man, that's a pass-onable, transferable, reproducible process. And so is the collegiate work in the process of going from convert to disciple-maker. Their process is transferable, pass-onable, and likewise. So that's the thought behind that.
Warren?
In our discussion group, we, I think, concluded that highly structured man-to-man does not, in opposition to what was shared this morning from the pulpit, that Bob shared with us, but it's got to have heart and love, and that's foundational to it. So it's not an either-or. And then the other thing, 1 Corinthians 3, different men minister at different times in a person's life, and different men minister in different ways. Paul probably ministered in a different way than Paul, and he certainly ministered in a different way than Paul did. So, in the final analysis, the Lord ordains, the Lord gives growth, and there's room for a variety of styles, even though the emphasizing the, all the parts of the thing helps us to somewhat stay on track.
What's that?
To speak to that, just one more thought on that same thing, Warren, that you're talking about. I think the concern that I always have whenever we come up with a syllabus or a 2-7 or a tool or anything, that it seems that our primary emphasis and focus ought to be on the function that God's called us to, and that the form enables us to get there and accomplish that. The danger or the propensity in all of our ministries is that the next generation removed comes out in the letter of the thing, and oftentimes the form is, and Chuck, you were speaking of that a little bit, the form gets exported when in essence we want to delineate that it's the function. And so it behooves us, who are responsible from the ministry, to get one and two generations into the ministry to ensure that the spirit of the thing's there and not only the letter. So, you know, this seems like that's always going to be a potential danger for us, and that we need to recognize that the focus is on the function. The form, we can't accomplish that function without form either. So just make sure where the focus is.
Okay.
Could I make a comment?
Sure.
I think just to clarify also the thought of the southern men going north, which happens to be the Midwest, that things like these without the information behind them can often unnecessarily cause adverse reaction, and that the things that may enter into the minds of people who see 9-10 people heading up there think that that's a top-down type of a decision, that it's something that, you know, Jack Mayhall and the RD say, you will go to the Midwest to learn these things. And I think it might be helpful for, you know, as things like this get around, to be aware that, one, they're not coming there to learn a structured man-to-man type method primarily. They're coming really, these are men in the ministry, going out to the ministry, who have recognized their need to learn some concepts, some scriptural basis, some fundamentals to begin with in a particular kind of, in a collegiate ministry especially. And that they need some of this, that they feel that they lack it, it would better prepare them. And it is they and their supervisors who have expressed a desire for this. And we've tried to work out the arrangement for that. We're by no means holding up the Midwest as a model. If you know Larry Whitehouse, Bill Tell, these guys, while there are some similarities in their training, they're also quite dissimilar in several things. And so the people are coming, and I have talked with three of the Southeast brethren, just their men, and to hear them express what it is that they really want and why they've come and what their background has been gives me a great appreciation for their humility and for their teachableness, and a great challenge to us and what we hope will contribute to them.
Okay, thanks, Ray. Okay, are there some questions you'd like to bring up outside what we've asked so far?
Bob Shepherd, just share with us a little bit what's on his heart at headquarters and Matt that we could have a better feel of what's going on.
Amen. Well, if he ever finds out, he'd be glad to. Come on up, Chef. Or you want to just do it from there?
I want my heart, I want my region back.
Envy?
And he needs people.
And
you need people.
And we need people. Desperately need people for glory.
What assurance do we have that those people will receive help?
Well, that's what
you and I talked about.
Yeah. That's a legitimate question. And I think we need to be cautious that Glen Erie will never be what it used to be in the early days of the Navigators, in that most of the staff came out here to receive some primary training. There was tremendous opportunity to be trained and to learn. For instance, the gals tied into Mangy and the guys here at the Glen, there was all kinds of opportunities to learn and to develop and serve in servanthood and character and so on. The ministry opportunities are few, because you have to go into town to do that, and we need to be aware of that. But I think too many people are living with the idea that, hey, you know, the land is where people used to get their training for staff and so on. I don't know how the rest feel out here. I think I know how they feel. And they feel the same way that I do, and that is, we're not going to return to the days of yesteryear. The training of staff is being done in the field and being done part by them, and it probably could be done out here. But nevertheless, there are some tremendous opportunities, for instance, in the whole administrative services and NAV press and so on. When you take Gal on through Dan Rich and some of these men, I think they're the best around in business, period, not just with the Navigators. And you go over and talk to some of that NAV press gang, and they're really turned on with what they're learning about business. So you've got some alumni coming up that you're not going to tie into your ministries, and we'd love to have them. There are some other slots here on the land that they can fit into. But I think it's important. We can't guarantee they're going to get training. If they want to be helped, there are all kinds of people here that will help them. I personally am involved with several of the staff couples here, discipling them, taking them a little further, Bill Threlkell. There's all kinds of people here. But usually what happens is the person comes out and they don't seek out the help. They expect it to be there in the structure and in the form that it had back in the area, and we just don't have that set up here.
Okay. Do you have a comment, Jack? Yeah, I think I can answer Lee's question. Chef is maybe in a little bit of a difficult position to answer it. I think I know what's on Chef's heart and is on the guy's heart, Jerry's and Rod's. And mine, as far as headquarters is concerned, there I think there are probably three or four things that I could boil it down to. One is a smooth running operation here that serves the staff in the field in the administrative and financial areas, administrative areas. I'm not sure, and I don't know how the guys feel about this, that we will ever eliminate all of the problems that exist between a headquarters operation and a field operation. I've talked to numerous people in the business world, and I don't get very encouraging reports on that, that it's ever resolved. But we're working on it, and I think these guys really have it on their hearts to smooth out the functions here to the point where it eliminates the major part of the problems that we have between the field and the headquarters, and to set up the functions here to operate in a capacity of serving the field. I would say the same with Glen Eyrie, to continue to improve the service of Glen Eyrie and to expand, where we can, the ministry of Glen Eyrie. For instance, one of the things that the guys are beginning to move into now and do some philosophizing on and beginning to come up with some plans for is what they're calling an executive ministry, which will be something that the men here in the top leadership at headquarters can become involved in to a greater or lesser degree, depending upon their time and their interest. But to use Glen Eyrie in that capacity as a resource for reaching top executives in the business world. And that's about all I can say about it right now. But I know it's one of the things that's on Bob's heart. You ask what's on his heart. Well, I know what's on his heart. Another thing is finances. Not just for headquarters, but for the navigators. That Rod and Bob and Jerry are all concerned about the finances of the navigators, what new things we can do, how can we take more of the burden off the field staff, what can we do from headquarters that would be innovative and creative, what new areas can we move into. There's a lot of thought being given by these guys in this area. And then, of course, NAV Press is a very exciting thing to see what is happening. And I know that these guys also, and Bob has on his heart to see NAV Press continue to maintain the quality that it has gained and to make the ministry contribution, not only here in the United States, but worldwide, in the field of materials, and then to continue to expand at the rate of about 15% a year, and that's what the plan is right now. We are, along that line, we're in the process of coming up with a set of policies that we're asking the ILT to adopt worldwide relative to navigator materials and the involvement of NAV Press in it. Which is really exciting from one standpoint in terms of the ministry that it can have around the world. I can't tell you the exact number, but the Christian Booksellers Association convention was in Denver this past July, and Dan had a number of people approach him during the convention from other countries who love our materials, who realize the ministry that they can have, and they want to distribute them. Well, sometimes there's no problem involved with that, but then other times there is, especially in countries where we already have a ministry going, where there is materials in the process of being translated. And so we're in the process of working out some of these touchy and sticky areas, so that we can satisfy the guys overseas and still give NAV Press the opportunity to expand their ministry. So these are some of the things that I think are on Bob's heart.
Okay, another question.
Jerry?
Sir.
Could I comment on that also, an answer to, it's relevant to this at least, and I think it piggybacks on it, as Dolores said. There are two things about the Glen that I don't think have changed from the good old days of yesteryear. And that is unavoidable, and we can't really lose it, the value of what happens to a young guy or gal who's been here at Glen Eyrie for a year or 2 years, what that does to her perspective of who we are, when we say, the navigators, when they're out in Timbuktu trying to get their check out of the mailbox. And the other thing is the character that we request, and the character trait that we ask for most in missionary-type people, are they a flexible American? Well, I don't know any place we can duplicate the flexibility training in Glen Eyrie and the real servanthood. You can change a guy into direct minister from one campus to another, and he hasn't begun to learn flexibility. And what happens to a first-term missionary going through 2.5 to 3 years studying Arabic He gets frustrated because he doesn't have a ministry. Because his hopes and joys and cares is based on ministry, not on God. And it's a new process for him. Boy, they learn that here. And I put a plug for Glen Erie for men in the right time, the right place, and the right preparation. Because it does some things for them. Give or take what they might do in a creative way or ministry opportunities. And I'm convinced of it.
Okay. Thanks, Colin.
In all seriousness, two or three highly qualified disciple makers would revolutionize our Glen operation here. I mean, qualified PCS type, Defensive Contact Staff type people would revolutionize it. Otherwise, we're just going to have to struggle along like we have been doing. Vanjie has completely turned the gals thing around because she's been out there, she recruited the gals and brought back. But we're not getting that kind of, that caliber, so to speak, of guy coming back here. Here.
Good. Okay, Bob. Thanks. No. Yes, Gary.
Is there a plan for the future for another such meeting as this in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, never for community staff to gather again?
Can you hear the question?
Sorry. Good. Question was, is there a plan for another gathering of community staff like this? I'll have Jack answer that. Do you think we ought to have another one sometime in the future? Well, that's about 10 out of... I think probably the best way to make sure that we have one. Yeah, excuse me.
Look wise next time for those that have one.
Okay. I think probably the best way for those of you who would like to have another one and who would like to lobby for it, your RD is the guy to put the pitch to. And, you know, I don't know what's realistic, 2 years, 3 years. But Alvin Smith is saying 4 years, he'll be back in the U.S. by then. So, I think we want to do it in accordance with what you feel your needs are. The answer to the question is no, we don't have a plan. But we're sure open to have one. No question about that.
I think, as I recall, the RD meetings and Jack's leadership in that was the idea to have one in a functional way for collegiate, military, and community over the period of 2 years and then let the demand, you know, if it helps, fine. If it doesn't, then the idea is dead. You know, we just want to do it. And it's very important, you know, if people go away from these conferences grousing and saying, it didn't help me, it will have a decided effect on the RD voting the next section. So you do need to make your requests and wants known.
Jerry?
Francis?
What we're talking about?
That's all right. Go ahead, Johnny.
Sorry.
I was thinking, in light of what we're doing with 2-7, 2 years from now would be a key time, it seems like, because we've had a lot of experience. We know where we're going. A lot of those that are just getting kicked off that have finished and completed some courses.
Okay, I think that's true. Francis?
Just to change the subject, first question is, what is the criteria for the planning of conferences during the summer at Glen Erie? In other words, what is our basis for determining what type of conferences we offer during the summer season? And secondly, why is it that we plan a discipleship conference as the first of the year when it's a more likely time that our single adults that we work with are not able to come? For example, in our case, many of our people that won the conference last year are still teaching in June 4th, 10th. And furthermore, just a suggestion, I think in our planning of conferences at Glen Erie, we should have somewhere in the middle of the summer another discipleship conference that is open for the entire U.S. to be able to come. I'm curious about that because we've run into constant snags with some people. We believe that we've had a better ministry in their lives after they spent one week here at Glenary. This really helped. And we keep running into problems with the conference schedule that we can't get them out of because they're all booked up for other reasons and things of that nature.
All right, I think Shutt can answer, and there has been, those of us who are RDs have talked to them, things like that.
The primary usage of Glenary in the summer has been, other than the Midwest, I think there are 5 or 6 weeks of Midwest conferences, and that has been evolutionary. In other words, Jim Morris started with one, and several years have gone by, and he needs 3. We are very open to renegotiate, to introduce new conferences at any time that you feel you're ready for it. The thing you cannot have is no attendance. We had one, I think it was the summer before, and it cost about $15,000 in lost revenue. And that's really hard because we were committed to a couple hundred people and 80 show up or whatever, and that's the hard part of it, Francis. But we're open. If you feel that you want to spearhead something like that, and you can give us some help with it, we'll renegotiate with Jim and the guys in the Midwest and cut them out.
Chef.
Just remember the lost revenue.
Just because a conference is being spearheaded by a certain region or a couple of states together, does that mean that it is completely closed to people from other sections of the country?
No, it is not. And particularly with Jim and the guys, there's been no problem. As long as they know, Francis says, yeah, I've got 15 people I need to get in this conference, and all he needs to do is pick up the phone, they're right here, and we'll negotiate with Jim for him.
Yeah, now that may answer part of your question, Francis.
It may answer part of it, but the problem is, it's difficult with young singles to negotiate and get them scheduled for way next year. Usually when we start working with them to consider coming to a conference is in January of the year, we try to get them to plan their vacations and everything. And I don't know if I'm the only one running the problem, but I've had some people that really wanted to come here, but they couldn't because they've all booked with other, like Midwest Region conferences. And I find out in discussing this that this year's conferences are mentioned next year and they're already booked for next year, full July. So it kind of makes a real bottleneck.
No, that's not true.
Perhaps we could build those conferences as open.
That's not true, is it?
No.
Yeah,
I mean, they're booked, but they're not full.
Oh, yeah, right. They're on the books and scheduled, but they're not full. But he's talking about the type.
Yeah. Let me make a comment here. I have a little invitation here to, and I think a number of you do, to attend a meeting at 7 tomorrow morning. Are you aware of this, Chef, with the managers for Glenary? Okay, a meeting was called and a note sent out for the managers, with the managers and the conference directors and representatives of the region to discuss. One thing was the 1980 schedule. And I forgot what the other two agenda items were, just some procedural things. Now, I don't know, pardon me? Oh, Mel, are you calling the meeting? Who's calling?
Len Preussen.
Okay, well, whatever it is, I do not, okay, what are the other two items, Jim? Yes, they're working on 80. Now, Chef, I don't know where that is. If regional, you know, we're not having one this next summer from the Pacific, but I was going to send one guy to be there because we feel we eventually will want one from the Pacific region.
Well, I think that's the way it's going to have to be. If a region wants a week, all they need to do is tell us when, and we'll go work with them on that.
Right.
I think in answer to Francis' question, it will be very hard for us to plan a conference around Francis Cosgrove and, you know, 10 people that he might want to come. I'm not saying that either.
Yeah. I'm just saying that in the overall schedule, we schedule a discipleship conference very early June for singles, which is so difficult for many of them who are teachers and others to get here.
And yeah. There's no other possibility during the summer. Yeah, the prime weeks are all booked. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a filler conference, the way I look at it. It's one that we don't have something scheduled or laid out and so forth. I agree with the problem, and I think that's something Chef needs to work at. There is a financial issue. They can't, you know, we require that this place sit on black sheets and the ledger books, and it's totally on conference income. And so they must function, and they have been, what, for the last 3 years now in the black? And that's new. Bob Stevens.
I'd just like to put in a plug for the conference we are going to have in the middle of the summer. It is going to be a discipleship conference. It is open to anyone, any age. It would not be appropriate probably for the collegiate, but for anyone out of college, single, married, pastor, layman. The theme will be discipleship. We will have evening messages like any other conference from the Word. We will take you through, those that want to go through, the 2-7 clinic material during the day. There will probably be other workshops and types of things for people that who are already in the 2-7 or would not be interested. So this will be a general open discipleship conference first weekend, August.
Okay.
Thank
you. July 29, August 4, I think it is.
29.
Yeah, that bridge week across July and August. Yes.
This brings up another question I have. I realize that oftentimes the speakers at these conferences aren't known until later in the year, and so it's difficult to get that kind of information on a brochure. But could we have brochures in hand earlier in the year that just simply show the dates, nothing else? Dates and what region is primarily being serviced by that. Because it seems like each time we brought people out here, most of them have got that registration in by October and November, and we get the brochures in January.
We've got a temporary one that has the dates on it for registration. It doesn't have the speakers listed, but it's down in the conference office.
Could we get some of those cranked out and into these men more?
Okay, now we'll do that. Yes, we can. I think there's an expense thing. They would like to have only one printing of the brochure, probably, of a broad, you know, thousands upon thousands of them. Okay? Some other questions? Johnny?
Back on the 2-7, I think Bob mentioned the other day about doing something or some thinking on the control of the quality of the sessions. Is there any more that can be said on that, what the thinking is?
Stevens?
Well, this, of course, is the biggest problem we have, and will be the main, from my mind, the main topic of discussion at our 2-7 staff meeting Friday and Saturday. The quality control right now is by requiring people who are going to teach the course to either have gone through at least the first three courses, or go through the navigator-led teacher training clinic. And that's our quality control now. How we can maintain the number of clinics that will be demanded as the word gets out among churches, this type of thing is our biggest problem.
Yeah, and just a comment, there's difference of opinion, I think, among many staff, perhaps, you know, just among many of us as to how tightly should it be controlled, because in any case, the answer we come up with is philosophy, not experience. Well, not altogether. There is a good bit of experience, but there's a lot yet to be figured out on that. Okay, let's take a couple more questions. I mean, we can go on for some while. We've gone an hour and a quarter, and I think that... But let's just take a couple more questions, and if there's some things burning on your mind that you want this group to address, or any one of them, we'll do it, but we don't want to drag it on forever. Herb?
Just a comment on the advertisement of the conferences in the brochure. If the conference time is open, it's not filled, then it seems like the title of that conference could probably be named differently, so people from different parts of the country could feel free to go to it. So if it's called the Midwest Conference, then people wouldn't normally think that they would be included if they didn't live in the Midwest.
That's true on a public basis. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that Chef, you and that group are just going to have to work on with some representatives from the regions. It is a recruiting tool, of course, for those in the Midwest.
Yeah, the Midwest, whoever is sponsoring that conference is doing all the legwork and so on, and they're primarily putting the conference on for the people that they're involved with.
Right.
You see, I think that in this, there over the years, as Bob says, there's been an evolutionary process that's taken place in which back several years ago, Glen Eyrie used to be the promoters and the one who put on conferences, who determined what a conference would be, and people would come to it. It was then the general conferences. But at some point, it began to change as different areas would request a week. And in a sense, renting it like we rent a conference facility. And so that is a difference, and that's why the different names is that whether it's Iowa, Nebraska, or the Kansas Conference, usually those conferences run to the limit. And at this point, I would not be surprised if all the Kansas Conference already spoken for from the last one. And so what it is really is an arrangement between that area and Glen Eyrie to, as it were, sell us the week. But that it is open in that if there is space, the men will be very happy to take anyone there. That's why they are advertised that way, so the people from that area know it's really for that ministry. And that's what has evolved from Glen Eyrie being the one who take the responsibility for the conferences and promoting them and putting them on to the different areas. That is why the Discipleship Bible ends up where it does, because Glen Eyrie just works with whatever week is left over after the different areas have said, could we get that week? And Glen Eyrie says, okay. So they work with whatever week is left over.
Mm-hmm. Good. Danny?
What I think is happening, though, Ray, and what I hear a little bit, is the closer you are to Glen Eyrie, the easier it is to get the people to it, the less expensive it is for them to come, okay? And it's such a tremendous recruiting tool when a couple or a single person gets a week there that when we're out on the West Coast, we can't fill up a conference. We don't think this coming, say, in 80, we're even reluctant to book a week in 80. We're not sure we can fill it up with a couple and make it a viable financial situation for Glen Eyrie, et cetera. But we'd like to have some pockets that we can get some people into, is what I hear, staff messing, who are not that close to Glen Eyrie geographically.
Okay, Dolores.
It's possible just on the brochure to say this conference being sponsored by the Midwest, but and spaces open, available to anyone. So it would show that it's, you know, primarily for the group, but it would also give people freedom to ask for it if that was a free time.
Okay, Chef?
Yeah, we'll work it out. We'll come up with some refreshing promotion. We'll come up with some conferences that will be of general nature that anybody can come to. No problem.
Okay. Jim Morris?
I can't remember when we have ever had a conference that didn't have people from other areas there. Not a great number, but where the request was made, where there was space available, we have always welcomed people from other areas.
Okay. Okay, I think we're going to... is there anything pressing, the question you've always wanted to ask? Mac Mahal would like to make a closing statement.
Well, I am beginning to become a firm believer in the proposition that if anything can be misunderstood, it will be misunderstood. And in light of that, I'd like to just take one more little attempt, make one more little attempt to clarify for anyone here the matter of the guidelines for staff in the community ministry. Now, if what I have to say in the next 3 or 4 minutes will just help one person, my saying it, I feel, will be worthwhile.
I feel that these guidelines have been developed and have been given to you in the spirit of wanting to help keep our community ministry on target. Now, I use that word spirit very carefully because that is what I feel it is. I have been involved from the very beginning in all of the discussions surrounding this. And there is a spirit that goes along with the guidelines. And it is not a spirit of the letter of the law. It's a spirit of the law. And that is the reason why I may have communicated the other morning a degree of flexibility within those. Now, some may think it was wishy-washy, but I prefer to think it was a degree of flexibility. And I feel that that's the way it should be, because it's designed to help us. And so, therefore, I wanted to try and communicate the spirit. And it's the same idea that's behind 2 Corinthians 3, 5, and 6, particularly verse 6 that I quoted to you the other morning, that the same God who is sufficient for us has also made us sufficient ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. Because the letter killeth, and the Spirit gives life. And you and I both know that anything that is imposed upon us in terms of the letter of the law, the first thought we have is, how can we get out of it? I think that's called human nature. And therefore, I wanted to try and convey to you the spirit in which it has been developed and in which we want it used. It's to help us. It's to be some parameters to keep us on track. Now, therefore, there is also a reciprocal spirit in the way in which it is received and utilized. For instance, it was mentioned to me by someone that what happens on this 18 to 35 year age thing when, you know, Mayhall, you seem to communicate a little bit of degree of flexibility there. And I said something to the effect, you know, don't worry about it. Well, that's what I meant. Don't worry about it. Don't get uptight about that. But what happens down, this question was asked down the road when a staff guy, we look at his ministry 2 or 3 years down the road, and his second and third generation people are all sixth graders or people living in Sun City retired. Well, that's a good question. What does happen? Well, I think what it does, it conveys to us what the spirit of the receiving of the guidelines are on the part of that staff individual, right? I mean, he's not really with us in spirit on it. We've given it in a spirit of let's keep our cutting edge as sharp as we can. And on the other hand, I was talking to a guy here at the conference, and he was telling me how he got started in his ministry. And when he went into the city in which he's operating, the first contacts that he had were with men who were obviously outside the 18 to 35 year age bracket. In fact, they were excessively outside of it. But he went ahead because they had come to him and wanted help, and they were open and wanted to grow. He went ahead and worked with them. But what that developed into, he told me, a year or a year and a half or 2 years down the road, was their contacts were younger men. And now the primary thrust of his ministry is definitely within the guideline. He's still working with these older guys. But that communicates the spirit that we want. And I just wanted to make sure, if there's just even one or two people here that didn't catch that, I wanted to try and articulate it. We don't want to restrict you or try and put clamps on you and your ministry. That's not the idea. The idea is to help keep us right dead center on target. And that's the spirit behind it. And also that's the spirit that we expect it to be accepted in and to operate it under. So, end of sermon. Thank you.
Vern Thompson has one announcement that he would like to make. So, Vern, would you please do that?
Thank you, Jerry. This is quite apart from the subject matter of your discussion. Some of you may know that we have a Midwest staff team working on a new Bible study series for us in NAV Press. It's headed up by Ray Ho, and it's going to be called the Christian Family Bible Study Series. And I'm looking for about 10 volunteers from you men and women, staff, who would like to help us in the field testing. It's very simple. I think what we plan to do and need to do is to have about 10 volunteers who would take one of the books, one of the study books, and have about half a dozen people go through the study. We'll have some guidelines, some questions, to get some responses, just to make sure that the subject matter and questions are on the right direction and the right kind of content. So if you would like to get your names to me in the editorial department over at NAV Press, about 10 people, we'd greatly appreciate it. It would certainly validate the studies that these men have worked up and just get us a little further towards the goal of completing it. This will be a 5-book series, probably in a similar style and format to the Life and Ministry of Jesus Christ study series. And it's on the topic of the family. We feel that it's going to have a very significant and long-lasting ministry in the lives of people all over. So if you would send your names to me, I'd appreciate it. I could take them now if you'd like to do that. And thanks to the volunteer there, Norm, John, and Dave, and Bob. That's 4, so I need 6 more. Who'd like to take it? All this will involve just one simple book. Question?
Yeah. Is this style for a family to use, or is it just about a family for adults to use?
It's both.
You can take your kids.
I was just flipping through some of the studies myself today, and the team has put in some real good project-type questions. You know, read these passages together as a family, discuss them, and see what you can come up with. And since this is a kind of a field test, constructive comments, suggestions, improvements would be very welcome at this stage. And we would be mailing out the instructions and the materials at a later date. So it won't need to be a time-consuming thing.
Would it help her and just give them the chapter titles?
Can anyone here do that? I'm not as familiar with the product as you men are.
The first book is on the family and God. And it covers mainly, of course, the family developing the right concepts of God and the relationship with God. And it is geared to salvation, quiet time type things, but especially geared to the right concepts of God. And trying as much as possible to put in the family context. This second has to do with scriptural parenting, or
the husband and wife,
the responsibilities of husbands and wife. And that title is quite descriptive, and it covers such things as communications, sex, roles. Or we change that word roles to responsibilities, handling conflicts and things like these. But they're Bible study. And third book is scriptural parenting. And the fourth book is family issues, which talk about the family as a unit. The family issues such as divorce, things like these. Single parenting, we're trying to identify some of those issues. That book is not complete as yet. We have about half of it done. And then the family in society. And the family, which covers a family's relationship with the world, with other Christians, its ministry in the world.